Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts. I'm David Fleming. Now, before we get to the program, a reminder. Coming up the second week of December, KVCR will once again be partnering with Feeding America Riverside San Bernardino for our Feed Your Radio, Feed Your Family campaign, during which we'll be looking for listener contributions with a really nice benefit. Every dollar that a person contributes during this short campaign means a meal for someone in need here in the Inland Empire. A $50 contribution means 50 meals. A $100 contribution, 100 meals. It's as simple as that. Once again, this short drive is coming up in the second week of December. We'll have further reminders as we get closer. Now to KVC Arts.
Here we go.
The sole focus of tonight's program is music from and conversation with Jerry Beckley, one of the founders of the band America, giving us Horse With No Name, Sister Golden Hair, Tin Man, and more throughout the early to mid-70s, then back to the top of the charts briefly in the early 80s. And now, while America goes on its 50th anniversary tour, Beckley has just put out his seventh solo release, called 5 Mile Road. Five Mile Road, it's so much of a solo record, with you writing 98% of it, and then even laying down most of the instruments and backing vocals. Is this typical of your other solo albums, you doing most of it yourself, or was this sort of a new branch with 5 Mile Road?
Well, it took it, I guess, not my favorite cliche, but it took it to the next level. I hadn't really thought, my joke answer to that is, when they told me they wanted a solo album, I thought they meant that I was supposed to play everything. So. But the reality is, when you have a studio at your house, I'm okay at those instruments. I can play a little drums and stuff. And I'm never opposed to, if it gets beyond my skill set, you know, calling in the pros from Dover. But in this case, yeah, I played most of it. I do like, you know, sometimes there's some tracks on this. There's one called Hang Your Head High that I kind of went out of my way to make it sound live and trashy and kind of a bit garage band. But it's all me playing it. So, you know, I guess it's just how you approach these things. There are some guests. There's some other people featured. But, yeah, it's mostly me.
Summer nights seem to last forever. The city lights burn up till dawn. I can't say how we ever managed, but anyway, history goes on.
Life Lessons, this is the opener for it, and my God, it's a hard drive, but not too loud, unless, like me, you had your headphones up too high before putting them on. Was this one actually written to open the disc, or was this a case of you had several songs to choose from, and then you had to choose, and this one gave you the drive you wanted to kick off this newest release.
That's how it happened. I don't want to say that I never have that in mind. Like, if you have a long, low fade, it doesn't mean that you might not think, oh, this would be great to be the end of side one or the end of the album. So those things do cross your mind, but I never really approach things as that's going to be the opener, you know?
Okay.
And in this case, 5 Mile Road, the kind of overall theme started to become a bit of life's journeys and life's lessons. And so it just fit the bill. It's an upbeat tune, which is always nice to start with. It doesn't involve a whole lot of deep dives to get your ear.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this one also does feature Bill Mumy, and I mentioned him earlier, and for folks listening that don't know, this is young Will Robinson from Lost in Space. And so, again, how did this collaborate? You had worked with him years back on one of his albums. I'm blanking on the title of the album at the moment, but you had worked with him years ago, so was this just you calling in a friend, one of those cases?
Well, it's me calling in a friend, but it's much more than that. It's me calling in one of the great lyricists. He's a real talent, Bill, and I'd like to tell the story that we met him back in February 72 when we came to the States to release the first album. We ended up with a week at the Whiskey A Go-Go in Hollywood on Sunset, and
cool.
The Horse was about to become number one. It wasn't quite number one, but it was the biggest selling record in the country, and there was lines around the block. It was a great week. And a lot of very fascinating people. Brian Wilson came.
Oh,
Danny Hutton from Three Dog Night. We met a lot of people that week, and Bill Mumy was there, I think, every night. So we connected right away, and as you probably know, when you're looking at Bill, you think, why do I know this dude? Did I go to school with this guy or something? He's got that face. And then you realize you've kind of grown up with him as a child actor and stuff. And Bill connected us with the record plant. He had a group called Redwood, and they were doing the fantastic album. And that's how we got hooked up with the record plant and Mike Stone, who went on to engineer second album. So we've known Bill a long time.
Okay, gotcha. And yeah, Bill, as soon as you mentioned what a great lyricist he is, I would say, yeah, he gave us Fish Heads. I had no idea he was part of Barnes & Barnes.
That one. No. I'm on some Barnes & Barnes.
You are? Which one? Okay, I need to be able to track this down. Are you able to name a couple of tracks where you, I don't know,
no,
shouted or burped or whatever?
I can't think of, I'm pretty sure I'm on Barnes & Barnes. I know I'm on some Wild Man Fisher stuff.
Oh, wow.
That Barnes & Barnes produced.
Yeah.
Wild Man Fisher was the first guy to cut a song of mine called All I Think About Is You. And it was not touched again until America did Here and Now for Sony about 10 years ago. And we did a beautiful version of that. And the guy's producing it. You've had this for how long? I don't know, 30, 40 years. I didn't want to play in the Wild Man Fisher version, but it's quite good.
Yeah. Well, it cracked me. I'm a Dr. Demento fan, and so that's how I know Barnes & Barnes and Wild Man Fisher. And so with All I Think About Is You, it was when I saw that on the America, on the disc that you were just speaking about.
Did you make that connection? Did you realize that it was
The title caught me, and I was like, oh my God, no way. Is this America's doing Wild Man Fisher's song? Yeah, this is how I thought of it when I saw that.
Yeah.
So I'd
written it, and so Bill and Larry, I don't know, I think it was Bill decided, I'm going to get Larry cut that. This would be perfect. You know, I was thinking of Dr. Demento today. I was watching Two of the Roots, you know, Questlove, and they've got a documentary on AMC, I think, about the history of hip-hop. But there's some pictures of Questlove in one of his vinyl rooms collections, and he's got over 100,000 vinyl albums. And I remember when Dr. Demento, because he lived around the corner in Encino, and he had to move, and the problem was, I think, that the records were crushing the foundation of the house. You know, people don't realize that the vinyl weighs a lot, you know, and so it wasn't just a matter of we got to load this stuff in a truck. It was a big operation.
Yeah. I actually know a guy whose record collection cost him one wife and separately one house because of the foundation. I guess it was because of the foundation on both the marriage and the house, come to think of it, that was ruined with the records.
Careful what you wish for with these hobbies, guys.
Yeah, it's great to have the 78s, but oh my God.
Love was here all along.
Okay, well, so with Numi or with some of the other guests, did they end up laying down something new over an existing recording, or was something written for them and then they came in?
Yeah, it's different for each case. In Bill's case, that was a song that lyrically, I had the sketch of the tune. Mm-hmm. It really needed a lot of fleshing out in the second verse and the third verse and stuff, and Bill just, you know, stepped up the bat and knocked it out of the park. Your analogy, but that was not completed until he put his hands on it, whereas Rusty Young was added to tracks that just needed his immense abilities, and Jason Sheff just called on, he's on Home Again, and it just needed a bass parts that I was just a bit beyond my scope.
Gotcha. Well, now Life Lessons, just we've spoken all around it, but now just what it's about, and that is, you know, it's quite literally life lessons. I mean, we're looking forward, we're looking back, and you've talked about this album being a bit of that. But the quote that got me when talking about the song Life Lessons, and that is that in addition to looking forward, looking back, or, you know, I'm maybe really bastardizing it there, but the point is that it says, with a narrator still searching for the song. So they haven't found it yet.
No, I suppose that's a bit misleading. I think that there's nothing wrong by saying that the search continues. I find that sometimes I'm listening or, you know, got a podcast on, and I see a certain attitude with some of my fellow, you know, people of the same age or same generation, and they sound so dead sure of things that, like, one thing that they've found in themselves is the answer to many things. And I always think, when I hear that kind of tone, I think, oh, no, I'm never that sure about it. I'm continually learning or relearning or something. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's all, I don't want to, you know, dive too deep into the, you got to keep growing, you know. But I'm always up for it. And, you know, a new book or a new something, I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, absolutely not. And I really, really hope that my cup always remains with room to fill. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. This edition of KVC Arts is in conversation with Jerry Beckley, one of the founders of the band America, a mainstay of the early to mid-70s, and popping in briefly in the early 80s with You Can Do Magic. Beckley has recently released 5 Mile Road, his 7th solo work. It's another quote of yours, and I guess if anybody ever says that to you, you may be holding your breath like, oh God, what are they going to say? But you mentioned in your 20s, you make the mistake of viewing maturity as something that just clicks on like a light switch. But then, had any of us given it more thought, we'd have realized that we're going to be far more evolved at 30, 40, and even beyond 50. That's kind of sums that up nicely, I suppose. With these songs that became 5 Mile Road, you knew that it was going to be about your journey, past, present, and future, presumably. But my question, I suppose, and we sort of spoke around this one earlier, but my question is whether that these were a collection of songs that gave you this realization that this would be about your journey, or if it was a theme that you wanted to explore and then started writing about.
Really, really the first. I was writing about it anyway. And I have thought this through a little bit at the risk of saying exactly what I was trying to point out previous about knowing. But I think that, you know, when you think about rock and roll and pop songs and stuff, there's such a youth element and rebellion and stuff. And all of these things, they're very valid. They're, you know, from your early teens through your mid to late 20s. Whatever music you listen to at that time, wherever you strike in the points of history, that's going to really embed itself deeper than anything else, because you are so fertile at that time. But having said that, a lot of rock and roll is, and I love the great Brian Wilson thing, I'm bugged at my old man. You know, it's a great line, yeah. And it's just almost humorously deep. But it's no good to be, you know, writing I'm bugged at my old man when you're 30 or 40. So that I use that as the analogy. The challenge is now, what do you write as you become a father, as you evolve a little bit further down the line and stuff? My friends who, you know, hadn't had kids, and they've been through maybe a million things, and then finally they're expecting their first child, and I say, well, welcome to chapter two. You know, you just think that everything else you've been through is so multifaceted and, you know, and all these great experiences, but it's not until you... So there's a great example of, you know, you've got no idea what you're in for until you start to address these things. So, in pop music as a thing, I find that's the challenge, you know, and it's like some of the great people, the Claptons of the world and Peter Gabriels or stuff, that were quite good at continuing to evolve what they had to say and play and stuff. To me, that's the target. You don't want to be writing I'm bugged at my old man at 40, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, there's a lot of wonderful examples of that kind of thing. Sebastian Bach still trying to sing We Are the Youth Gone Wild, or I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I want to rock and roll all night. Yeah. I think, you know, there's beautiful examples. If you think of Very Good Year, Sinatra, you know, I mean, that's almost cliche as far as looking back. But what a beautiful song. What a great sentiment. So it can be done.
Truly.
I'm not sure who wrote that. But
it might have.
You know, obviously, the singers of his ilk, in which there were very few, but they were interpreters and discoverers. I mean, they didn't write the music. Their job was to bring it to your ears. You know, it wasn't until our generation that everybody became singer-songwriters, where you had to do both, you know.
Right, right. Well, so many people that I speak with have been, in the world of doo-wop and early soul and rock and roll. And, you know, I say early, I mean, I'm talking about 50, you know, late 50s or mid to late 50s going into the early 60s. And so many of those were, they just wrote what people handed them, whether it's, you know, somebody coming out of the Brill Building or something like that, just songwriters. But then, yes, later on, we had to be, well, you're not singing your own stuff. What's your deal? You know, so that kind of thing.
Well, you know, Carole King is a great example.
Oh, great example, yeah.
When if people want to, a kind of way to bring that into focus, there was a Carole Goffin King song on the Beatles' first album, Chains. You know, so there's somebody who had done their time in their 10,000 hours or whatever Malcolm Gladwell called.
Yeah, big time. That's it's always a
and
surprise.
And then she became the voice of her own stuff. So
yeah,
in that case, there's a real evolution.
That's really sweet. And for me, it's, of course, in reverse. I know her as a singer, and then it's a cool treat to find some old song, well, like this one of the Beatles, that she was one of the writers or the writer on.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
that's good.
Well,
Now I'm going, not going back, going back. I'm listening to a lot of Bacharach, and I just love that stuff. You know, it's so great. And not that it wasn't glaringly apparent, and these were mammoth hits. This is no discovery of mine, but it is an appreciation society more, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
Everybody wants a piece of me. There's not enough to go around, you'll see. Still, it's one, one, and one makes three. You should know. You should know.
Looking at things in a different light as we age or have different experiences or whatever the case is. And that's in a way that brings me to the next song, and that is Something to Remember. It starts off anyway, talking about getting pulled in so many directions, and you really wonder what this is going to be about. I believe the opening line, something to the effect of, everybody wants a piece of me. And then other verses with other subjects, but what it comes down to is that special someone giving you comfort through their words, or maybe it's just the sound of their words.
To remember when the night is over.
And is that so, no matter what's going on around you, you still have this comfort? What's the, I guess, the basis of this song?
Well, I think, you know, nobody's immune to the beauty and the feelings of enjoying somebody's company or, you know, being in a relationship. I do like the opening line. Everybody wants a piece of me. There's not enough to go around, you'll see.
Yeah.
So that's all quite true, you know. One of the additions to having some success in this business is that it thickens up your time. I never say that time is the enemy, but time is clearly the challenge. And there's a lot of demand. And if you throw in the husband and father and all some other very valid pieces of the puzzle, you're going to be a pretty busy boy.
One question really about Home Again, and I am looking at most of these in order just because I took the time to listen, and so many times when I'm about to speak to somebody, the song or the album will actually get a full 30 rotations as I'm driving or at home before I speak with somebody. And so you could end up getting a question like, okay, 3 minutes and 15 seconds into this, we got that instead of, you know, whatever, that sort of thing. But just simply about Home Again, it's deeper than it seems. I mean, it isn't about coming home from a tour or something else quite literal. This is more of finding oneself. That is, home is a place to be, but also a state of being.
It's something that I think that people who grew up as service kids, you know, Dewey, Dan, and I were all in the Air Force kids, dependents, as they're called. And one of the things that you are denied in this path is that you don't have a hometown. You don't have lifetime friends. You move when you're 1 year old or 2 years old. You continue to move your whole life. The bonus of all of that is it gives you an incredible worldview. You see a lot more than most kids who grow up in somewhat more static environments. But the other thing is that you don't know any different. It's not like, for example, say your mom was married to somebody and you lived for the first 10, 12 years of your life and then remarried a guy in the Air Force and all of a sudden you're uprooted. When you spend that life transit as much as we did, that's all you really know. Now you build up all kinds of defenses and stuff, but I think there is a searching for that home that doesn't exist in our upbringing. I think that, you know, that when you look at other people's lifestyles or where, just the simple question of where are you from. You know, I was born in Fort Worth, Texas, and I moved to London when I was about a year old. I have no memory of it at all. So it's always a stretch when we play down there to say, you know, I'm from Texas, you know. But that's kind of what I'm stressing is the bigger picture. You know, what is home? What does it mean?
Beautiful. Well, that's good. I'm glad I didn't really miss the mark on that one.
and David Fleming in conversation with Jerry Beckley of the band America, though we're speaking mainly about his recent solo work, 5 Mile Road. More on Jerry Beckley at jerrybeckley.com and more on America at venturahighway.com. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 FM, streaming live at kvcrnews.org. Jumping ahead to 5 Mile Road, then, the title track, the lyric of it, this is, I believe, a quote from you, maybe from your website, and that is just talking about 5 miles out, 5 miles back. This is, again, not such a literal thing. It's more like how we go through the decades, how we go through life.
I use that analogy as kind of life's journey. You know, I just figured 5 miles is a manageable distance. People can relate to that. 5 miles out, 5 miles back. It's not some insurmountable, oh my God, a million miles. But we actually do travel millions of miles. I think I'm at 5 million miles on one airline alone, and I travel all the airlines. So the reality is quite different. But in the context of a song, a 3 or 4 minute commercial song, I thought it was a nice way to wrap what each of our journeys are. And it's basically a beautiful journey, hopefully for myself and for others who hear it. I'm not being critical. It's quite a ways.
Well, I had realized, I think, after the fact that this is not just a new CD, but it's a CD, it's an album, and a digital download. And so I was trying to find, is the split between side one and side two then? I just have the digital that I was sent as a forward, but is the split on side one and side two, is that between So Long Marnie and Vagabond, perhaps?
You know, I should know the answer to this. We actually, for the vinyl, we had to pull 2 songs out of the middle.
Oh.
So I'm afraid I don't have the answer. I don't want to sound like an idiot not knowing, but there's 3 different versions of it, and I'm not really sure. But you bring up a very interesting point, which was that the listening experience itself, which is what I try to talk about when you listen to an album, and this is what I hope people take away, is that trying to make something that is worthy of your time. You know, we grew up, you two, in the era of putting on an album, side one, and God forbid, flipping it over and playing side two, where we could take that much of a break in our day and really enjoy and absorb something. Great album experiences that I think of are like side two of Abbey Road, or, I mean, you might all have your own favorites, but something that didn't have the interruptions that we continually self-impose on ourselves today. And that's what I was looking for. You know, when CDs came along and everybody started front-loading the album, call it, with all the stronger tunes, you ended up with this really unfortunate taper of the good stuff is up front because they don't think people might listen long enough. I really tried to make 5 Mile Road a start-to-finish thing, and, it's up to somebody else other than me to say whether we pulled it off or not.
I would say that you have, because that's why I even ask about it, because you making it as an album, this means that you had to put a linear flow to it, this, you know, wonderful start, crescendo, come back down. You had to do this twice, side A and side B. You already talked about the fact that you didn't really write to, I need an opener, so I'm going to try to write an opener. So you had this collection of songs. Was it pretty much you or Jeff Larson? Was he a part of it at this point then, deciding the order?
Yeah, Jeff Larson was a very important part of that in sequencing because, first of all, I respect his ears. He's got really great ears, and he's a very talented singer-songwriter in his own right. But he also knows me, and he knows my material. And so right away, he could give me a perspective from a slightly different angle that I might not be able to see. But I have to say that there wasn't any kind of what moments where I seriously questioned anything that he was bringing to the table. And so, for example, 2 People at Once and stuff was a lovely closer, and it just all kind of made sense. It doesn't mean that that always happens. I think that the song selection, and I've always got more than we need for an album, and it's just a matter of, a lot of them hover in that kind of 60 to 70% done in my studio, and I try and save the wrapping it all up to be some of the energy that comes from the completion of an album, so that you're actually working, you're not just pulling stuff from your archives. You know, there is some actual real creative stuff happening right up until the end. And I think that he had a great deal to do with which songs were picked.
Gotcha. Okay.
5 miles out, 5 miles back, one sweet mile.
Vagabond. Now, this one has such a gentle yet a compelling drive. You want to listen whatever the words are with this song, and they're whispered to you. That's the nice thing about this one.
Yeah.
I get the feeling that much of your material, whether it was on America, any of those albums, or your stuff, I feel like your material is often words first, and then the guitar, or whatever comes into a company. Is that correct?
Well, you know, that's a common question, and not exactly the same, but what do you write first, words or the music? And there are certain duos, Bernie and Elton, you know, they don't even work in the same room. They've never written together. In my case, the answer is both. I do both. Some are music and some are lyrically. But with Vagabond, I would like to say that it is more an exercise in arrangement. I really like the song, and I think it's got a great mood and stuff. But there are subtle things that I played in putting that track together to try and hold your ear and hold the listener's ear. The horns, the beautiful big horn section doesn't even come in until halfway through, but it was needed to lift the kind of final ramp of the tune. There's a Barry sax, beautiful. Larry Klein was playing a baritone that really doesn't come in until the fade, but it was just necessary in my ears to add another layer as we're on the outro. And I think that's one of the things I really enjoy the most, are some of the more subtle things. And this is where you don't spend a minute or two digging in. You're really not going to hear it. If you just play it and you got it on in the background, you're not going to notice stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Vagabond was one of those ones that I started picking up things after the 7th or 8th or 11th listen or something to that effect. And then something about that is the sudden ending. It goes beyond finding that final note or chord and sustain. It just cuts off. So is this tied metaphorically into the story of Vagabond giving a sudden end to it? Or is it just... Is that too deep?
I think it was John Lennon said he doesn't know what his songs are about.
Okay.
Somebody else talking about it. But no, I just think that, and I do talk to composers. I speak at Loyola sometimes when I have time, and I'll talk about, you know, some of the things. One of the things I talk about is this need that seems to be rampant, where everybody has every guy in the band come in on bar one. They all come in and they're banging the drums, and everybody's in there.
Yeah.
I said, you got nowhere to go. Everybody's already playing. You're really denying yourself one of the great tools, which is built. Now, at the end, there are certain albums where every song fades, and I know certain writers that have said, I'm going to put an ending on every one of these tunes. But to me, the challenge is to do a combination where some fade, some are long fade, be cross-faded into the next, and others are abrupt at you when you weren't expecting. You know what I mean? And so,
that was this one.
I think they're all just tools, and in that case, one of the things about an abrupt ending like that is it really, it's almost like turning the lights on in a room. It certainly sets up for whatever is next because it catches your attention, you know. So it's just a sequencing trick, I guess.
It really snaps you out of the trance or this end of the, I don't know, meditation that perhaps a person will go into during Vagabond, and then boom, you're jerked right out of it. Then it's,
and I also rolled all the echo off, you know, so it's like bone dry. It's like right in your head, especially if you have a headphone.
Oh, yeah. Completely cut. Yes.
You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR, streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Now, briefly, before we go back to my conversation with Jerry Beckley of the band America, reminding you again that KVCR will once again be partnering with Feeding America Riverside San Bernardino for our Feed Your Radio, Feed Your Family campaign, during which we'll be looking for listener contributions with a really nice benefit. Every dollar that a person contributes during this very short campaign means a meal for someone in need here in the Inland Empire. A $5 or $10 contribution, that's 5 or 10 meals. A $50 contribution, that's 50 meals. It's really as simple as that. Once again, this short drive is coming up in the second week of December. That'll be one day and one morning, December 11th and 12th. Now back to Jerry Beckley of America, though looking mainly at tracks from his recent solo release, 5 Mile Road.
In the heart of the valley, where a dream comes true, you're painting a picture on the skies of blue. Try to imagine, let your hopes arise, the heart of the valley.
briefly on Heart of the Valley, and this is something, even though I'll say that this one I didn't give it as many listens just because there are things that really caught my ear that I loved jumping toward, like Stop Feeling Sorry. But Heart of the Valley, I understand that this is about the persistence of LA memories. And I'm not sure if I just didn't pick it up that it was in this area, or perhaps it's general enough that it could be memories of any special place. And so that really led to me asking, I suppose, if you tend to try to write in a general enough manner so that more people can find a personal connection. Or is that just how it comes?
Yeah, I'd like to think that's the case. But to be honest, I'm a bit of a selfish poser in that regard. I'm just writing, and you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Okay.
I did live in the valley, in the San Fernando Valley, for over 20 years, and I spent more than a legal amount of time on the damn 405, you know, and so I saw it as kind of this symbol of arcing right through Los Angeles and right through the hills and right into the valley, and carries on into Valencia and stuff, and it's just like this cleaver of traffic, you know.
Yes.
And anyway, there's some symbolism there. I used Auld Lang Syne at the end, which we did on bagpipes, and then my dear friend Jeff Boskett, who for years has sung with the Beach Boys and Brian Wilson, that's him on falsetto. Basically, it's a version of a refrain that I heard from, a bit obscure, but John Williams' score to Empire of the Sun. It's not verbatim, but that's where I got that line from, so if you really want to dig deep, that's what's going on at the end of that one. John Williams, you got a little Auld Lang Syne and a little Beach Boys.
I will actually be the one to, you know, lay that down on a four-track if I ever find the time and go, oh, I get it now, I get it.
Yeah.
Okay. We're talking about these songs like Heart of the Valley and Vagabond and some of the more, I don't know, introspective, not quite the right thing to say, but I guess
internal.
Internal, there we go. And then we go to Stop Feeling Sorry.
I gotta stop feeling sorry for myself. Yeah, I gotta stop feeling sorry for myself. Oh, I gotta stop feeling sorry for myself. Yeah, I gotta stop feeling sorry for myself.
Okay, this could easily be another internal. Maybe you were really at a point where this is all you were doing, feeling sorry for yourself, or is this more of a tongue-in-cheek thing? Then we talk about Jamie.
Well, I'd like to think it's more tongue-in-cheek, but unfortunately, it's somewhat too common occurrence in my world. You know, like, you just need to adjust your perspective sometimes. We're so self-focused nowadays, more now than ever, but it's also, obviously, it's rapping. Popping, you know, it's got clapping and bumping and stuff. And so any depth that the lyric might be feeling is really kind of overshadowed by, we needed an upbeat moment and this is a pop tune. And,
gotcha.
You know, Sister Golden Hair was an upbeat, you know, hit record that starts with, I tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed.
Oh, absolutely. Oh my gosh. I had even written down that very direct quote about Sister Golden Hair. I think maybe that was referenced with Calling, and so since you do write more for yourself, you know, not so much of a general idea of things, Calling, you and your partner were truly apart when this was written, as opposed to a song written about the idea of being apart, and this is what you'd feel?
You know, at the risk of stretching the whole poetic license, it's not a verbatim thing. It's
good.
A successful tune. I really love Calling, and it's one of the best things I've written. But it wasn't about anybody in particular. But it was about a very, very common feeling in our world. You know, you're constantly reaching out, trying to connect with your loved ones. And, you know, sometimes, I'm sure you've heard this, certain songs fall out of the air and you go, network. And Calling was one of those. The only thing I added was when I put the third verse on, I switched it to Falling. And just, rather than just one more time give it to you again, I thought, well, I'll just do a twist at the end. But in general, it's a pretty simple tune that I really... happy with how it came out.
Nice.
We'll be right back.
I would feel guilty about skipping Sudden Soldier as far as questions about it. This is something, I was at one point that person in the airport, except at that point, maybe I was wearing a uniform, but I felt just like a young kid, and I didn't realize how other people see you when you're standing there in your uniform. If people hear the song, it's almost self-explanatory. I spend most of my life in airports, and this is what I see. This is general.
I live in airports, so I see all sorts.
Yeah.
You know, we travel about 200 days a year, and a lot of those days are on planes. And I'd like to say that we had a private plane, but those days are kind of long gone. And we're into Dallas-Fort Worth or Chicago O'Hare more than most people on the planet. And you see these kids that are either going to or just come out of basic training, and there's a certain kind of look on their face that is somewhat excited and somewhat scared and stuff.
Scared.
And so Sudden Soldier obviously is about these guys. But I think recently with all of the different engagements that as a country we have found ourselves in Afghanistan and the Middle East and stuff, I seem to have been seeing more of them. And so with all the greatest respect, sometimes a flight attendant will say, well, please a hand for our troops or something, you know, trying to acknowledge their presence. And they look around at each other and, you know, they're trying to share in this moment that is obviously so multifaceted. But it's something I see a lot, and that's what music's for. You're supposed to, you know, painters paint and guys write tunes, and I just thought it was worthy of a song.
It is, and it took me by surprise when I saw it. And not a surprise and like, oh my God, why is Jerry writing about these? But more of oh wow, people saw this and wrote it down. That's just beautiful. You know, we talk about love and the beauty of a lake and the mountain, but to see people in the airport, this is just, it was a beautiful thing and it really struck me.
Thank you.
Oh my God, no, thank you. David Fleming in conversation with Jerry Beckley of the band America. We're hearing about his recent solo work, 5 Mile Road. More on Jerry Beckley at jerrybeckley.com and more on America at venturahighway.com. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 FM, streaming live at kvcrnews.org. Wrapping up the album and the disc, I suppose, Two People at Once. So this one, it addresses you, but it starts with your observances of the local bishop, the town bishop. And I suppose if I could just generalize it, I don't know, it's hard to be two people. So is that the public onstage version of you versus the guy going to the grocery store cleaning the cat box?
You know, it's a true story. The song is based on, I read a story about a bishop that was having an affair of some sort, and there was a guy that had to walk behind them. They would take a stroll through the gardens, and somebody would walk behind and rake because they didn't want this telltale sign of two sets of footprints. I thought, oh my God, there's an analogy there. You know, he's held at this pious position and stuff. And of course, it's not a stretch to find how we play that role, all of us in our lives, whether you're a father or a professional or something. You're trying to, how many plates can you keep spinning at the same time, you know? But in my case, it's two very defined lives. You go out there and you appear in front of thousands of people, and you come home and you take your boys out for a burger or something. I have had it told to me that people who see a show and stuff and then might get to know me will say that I'm a completely different person. I don't take that as disrespectfully at all, but I kind of get what they say. I am severely antisocial in what I do have of my regular private life. I never go to see shows. We don't go out too much. And it's a challenge for those loved ones and my wife and stuff, because I really just don't want to be that guy saying no to everything. But my argument is that when you spend 200 nights a year in front of thousands of people, that when you're left to your own devices, I can see how you might lean towards a little privacy. That's the analogy.
Okay, well, that's a great one. It wraps around the song nicely, and really wraps around a lot of things nicely. Okay, before we wrap, just one thing about your writing. So much of this album, oh, take this as you will, but it's complimentary, believe me, but so much of this album does feel like America, naturally. But it's much like when David Gilmour tried to not sound like Pink Floyd with some of his solo work, you know, and then it just worked out best when he embraced the fact that this is his sound. So with you and
or
some
about
of your
Phil Collins not sounding like him.
Yeah, oh my God, no. Yeah. Peter Gabriel did the better thing doing his own thing.
You know, I would have, if I saw more of it, might have Dewey on the record too, you know. It's just that when we do get home, we kind of scatter. I actually live in Sydney for as much time as we can, my wife and I, and Dewey has a home in Wisconsin, so we're geographically a long way. But I know what you mean, yes. You know, I'm half of that, definitely.
With some of your past works, was there ever a conscious effort to not sound like America, writing songs that maybe, oh, well, this one sounds like America, so maybe I'll save it for me and Dewey. Do you know what I'm saying there?
No, I know what you're saying, and no, I don't do that.
Good.
Very often, we'll just let Dewey pick which songs he likes. If we're going to do an America project and say, look, I got this bucket full of them here. Which ones are talking to you? One thing I do a little differently is I love horns. And I love the softer horns. I love a cor anglais and a French horn and stuff. And I use them quite a lot. They're not like brassy and yellow and all over the thing, but I really do like horns. And I remember I've worked quite a bit with Robert Lamb over the years, and he does so well too. And one time he was telling me, yeah, can't wait. He says, no horns. Because they're such a big part of the Chicago sound. So, I get that, what you're saying.
Yeah. I guess I just have to call attention to the fact that Five Mile Road, if anybody's ever enjoyed any America album over the decades, Five Mile Road is one that they ought to pick up. It would go right there with History or any albums of America. It sounds wonderful. It doesn't sound like some severe departure. With America, though, you're talking about this big bucket of stuff. We've got a 50th anniversary tour of America. Talk about a big bucket of stuff.
We actually started, we recorded the London Palladium last October, and that's a live concert video that's going to be a PBS special. there is already a Warner's release collection of 50th anniversary greatest. It comes as a two vinyl set, a multi CD set, or a one CD kind of best of kind of collection. Capitol, all the years of Capitol, they're releasing every one of those albums again in a box set. There is a collection coming out of the UK on an independent label called Gonzo that is all kinds of rarities. Quite exciting. We like that one a lot. And there is a book written by a lovely lady named Jude Warren. So we're in the thick of it, and we're off to take a break through the holidays. In mid-January, we pick it up, and we'll work through the year on the 50.
Been Music and Conversation with Jerry Beckley, one of the founders of the band America, for the entirety of tonight's KVC Arts. More on his new release, 5 Mile Road, and much more at jerrybeckley.com. And again, more on America at venturahighway.com. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Jerry Beckley, and here at KVC Art, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, and an extra thanks this week to Shireen Awad. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. And once again, coming up in the second week of December, KVCR will once again be partnering with Feeding America Riverside San Bernardino for our Feed Your Radio, Feed Your Family campaign, during which we'll be looking for listener contributions, and every dollar that a person contributes during this very short campaign means a meal for someone in need here in the Inland Empire. It's really as simple as a $100 contribution, that's 100 meals. A $10 contribution, 10 meals. It's a very short drive, one day and one morning, December 11th and 12th. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.